Hello, John from the Lib Dem podcast here. We are delighted to say that this episode is sponsored by Prater Rains. Now more than ever, you need a professional looking online presence and website. Prater Rains have been helping Liberal Democrat campaigns succeed for 18 years. Their Lib Dem Foci package combines a website, social media and email system to help Lib Dems win. You'll receive great support from real people, fair pricing and a huge range of features to choose from. Prater Rains are already the bespoke developers for Lighthouse, Lib Dem Draw Online and the LD Directory. They combine a talented system design with an unrivalled understanding of our party, our data and our systems. To find out more, check out the Prater Rains website at praterrains.co.uk/liberal-democrats. Now, on with the podcast.
I haven't yet met a mum or a dad yet that didn't want to do the very best by their children, but sometimes we make it really hard for parents to do the very best.
Hello and welcome to the Lib Dem podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in or downloading this episode. We're very grateful to have you, whether you are watching on YouTube or on Facebook, or if you are downloading us at all your podcast providers. I'm joined today by one of our regular panels, who is Laura Gordon from Sheffield. And you can catch everything to do with Laura at Lib Dem Laura. How are you doing, Laura? Good morning.
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm okay. Dealing with councils being back and work coming back is keeping us all very busy. But our guest today is someone, actually we've had more calls for this guest to be on the show, even more than any leader, any MP. We have the fantastic Kirsty Williams. Welcome to the podcast, Kirsty.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So, for those who don't know, I don't know who you are, who don't know that Kirsty is the Lib Dem Education Minister in Wales. And so you must have had a pretty quiet month, really, Kirsty. You know, not much going on there.
No, that's right. I mean, obviously, August, very quiet time in the education portfolio. But yeah, it's been a really challenging time since I took the decision to close schools for statutory purposes back in the middle of March through to this week, which sees schools reopening for all children here in Wales. So yeah, it has been the most extraordinary 6 months of what is now quite a long political career.
So, and again, just a bit of background, Kirsty, you were the youngest person elected in the first cohort to go into the Welsh Parliament in 1999, and you've been there for 20 years. So you've just talked about this last 6 months. We have to start with education, and just what has been the day-to-day been like for you in dealing with this crisis?
Well, it has been absolutely extraordinary and certainly unprecedented. I discovered that there is no manual on the shelf in a ministerial office that tells you how to run an education system in the middle of a global pandemic. So it's been really challenging to be able to respond and to make the decisions necessary. First of all, to keep our children and young people safe, to keep our teachers and our education staff safe, but also to keep people learning. And to address some of the really challenging circumstances that some children and young people will have found themselves in during lockdown. And now, as we know more about the virus and how it affects children and young people, how we can safely get our pupils, our college students and our university students back learning face-to-face as much as possible, and to limit the disruption of the disease of their education going forward.
So, Kirsty, obviously you're in coalition with Labour at the moment in Wales, but also working with the Conservatives at national level on the sort of education, on educational issues. I mean, how has that been? How have you found it sort of managing all of those different relationships, and sort of presumably there's kind of local relationships to bear in mind as well with some of the local councils that you must have to work with?
Well, certainly, it's definitely a diverse set of relationships to manage, because throw into the mix a Scottish Nationalist Education Minister in Scotland and a DUP Education Minister in Northern Ireland. So I think we've just about covered all the spectrum when it comes to running education in the United Kingdom at the moment. I'm very fortunate that I have a very good working relationship with my Labour colleagues in the Cabinet. Obviously, I am the sole Liberal Democrat in the Cabinet. And I'm very, very fortunate to work alongside people who are very respectful of my views and recognise the difference sometimes of views. But there is absolutely a focus on being one team that is making the right decisions for the people of Wales and focusing very much on what we can agree on rather than focusing on our differences. Because at a time like this, more than any, it is that focus on what we can agree on and what is in the best interests of the Welsh public that guides us. But I keep in very regular touch with my education counterparts across the United Kingdom. As I said, John, there's no manual for doing this. We're all having to learn as we go along. We often face the very same wicked problems. And to be able to have those conversations about what our approach is can be to solving some of those really, really difficult, difficult choices and difficult problems has been also very, very, very worthwhile. And again, I think in a time of crisis, the focus is very much on doing what's best rather than trying to score any political points. But recognising that the approach that we've taken in Wales is different to approaches that have been taken elsewhere, because that's what's right for us.
And I think that's probably the next question. I think most listeners will know, because obviously most listeners don't study the differences between all the different groups. So what has been the main difference between your approach and, say, what Gavin Williamson's has been in Westminster?
Well, it's a tough job being an education minister at the moment. So I don't want to, you know, denigrate the efforts of anybody that has found themselves in this position. I think some of the things that we've done differently here in Wales, for people who perhaps are not aware, we've worked really hard, and it hasn't been without its problems. I'd be, you know, not telling the truth if I didn't say there were bumps in the road, sometimes major potholes in the road, which is obviously a concern to a Liberal Democrat. But we were the only part of the United Kingdom that gave every child an opportunity to get back to school before the summer holidays. We were able to do that with really, really close working conversations and discussions with union colleagues, teaching, non-teaching unions and our local education authorities. We made a very early decision to continue to pay for free school meal provision through holidays. Obviously, people in England will be aware of a very high profile campaign from a very famous footballer to persuade the government to do that. We took a very early decision. We're very fortunate in Wales. In recent years, we've invested heavily in a digital learning platform. It's called Hub. Every child, every teacher in Wales has a Hub login that gives them access to, as I said, a digital learning platform, a complete suite of Microsoft Office tools, Adobe tools, as well as resources, which I just don't know what we would have done without. And we were able to very quickly utilise that platform to develop a continuity of learning plan. We were also very successful because of fantastic officials I have in the education department to be able to get laptops and MiFi devices out to children that were in danger of being digitally excluded and not being able to use that platform. We did that by basically asking schools to empty their classrooms of all their IT equipment to give it to children. And we are now in the process of replacing all of that IT equipment that's been given to children with brand new kit for schools. So the children have benefited from having those devices, and now the schools are all going to get new devices instead. So these are some of the differences. But I think here, we're a small nation. The number of people to engage with, I guess, is relatively smaller than it would be in other parts of the United Kingdom. And we've worked very hard to develop strong relationships, and even when things get tough, and they have been tough sometimes, we've been able to find a way of working those through.
Kirsty, that's an absolutely stunning record of achievement. Like, I mean, I thought that just by spending far too much time on Twitter, I'd picked up a lot of what you've been doing, but that, you know, there was a lot in there that I just hadn't come across, and that's just an absolutely stunning record of achievement. I suppose my question is, you know, it sounds like some of the things that you've benefited from in the pandemic were built on changes that you'd been bringing in previously, but also that some of the changes that you've brought in due to the pandemic, you know, could be things that could be incorporated into your educational thinking going forward. So, you know, for example, if, you know, all children now have access to the internet and laptops, that's something that is sort of potentially transformational for their learning, not only during the pandemic, but also going forward. And I suppose, so I suppose my question is, you know, how far are you thinking, or, you know, are you just sort of focused on the day to day, but, you know, how far are you thinking about how, you know, this disruption, you know, can be, you know, any positives can be drawn out of it in terms of how we think about education going forward and how we use the changes that schools have been able to bring in these incredibly difficult circumstances to try and support education in new and more creative ways going forward? Or is that something that you're kind of putting a pin in and saying, well, I'll think about that in the spring once we've dealt with getting everyone back to school?
You're right. There is absolutely a tendency just to focus in the here and now and just to deal with the immediate crisis that happens to land on your desk on this particular day, or the multiple of crises that land on your desk on any particular day. But you're right, we are trying as much as possible to keep an eye on the bigger picture and the wider strategic opportunities that the pandemic, you know, has brought to the fore. Sometimes it can feel really difficult to find any silver lining to this terrible, terrible dark cloud that has engulfed us as a country. But you're right. Seizing the opportunity to look at how we do our digital learning, to make sure that going forward children aren't digitally excluded, a real conversation about holiday hunger and what is the, you know, we've proven we can do it now during a crisis. Okay, building upon a program that we'd already introduced when I came into office of our holiday, of our food and fun scheme that we ran in the summer holidays. So, you know, we've proven we can do it. So what is the longer term impact on addressing holiday hunger? Looking at differences in pedagogy. Many people, myself included, have really, really struggled with the homeschooling. It's really difficult if you're working and trying, you know, to support your children's education. But for some children, remote learning has actually been beneficial to them and their mental health. So how can we incorporate some of these new pedagogical approaches for those children who have thrived under these circumstances? How can we use some of these techniques to really address some of logistical disadvantage? Again, this is not something new to us. We were already investing in what is called an e-school program in rural parts of Wales, where children find it really difficult to get the breadth of A-levels or breadth of qualifications. Mm-hmm. Because there's so few of them in the class and it's not economical to run. But if you're that child in Ceredigion that needs a further maths A-level to go to Oxford or Cambridge, you need a further maths A-level, and rubbing our hands and saying, we're sorry, if you live in Ceredigion, you can't do that, is not good enough. And these kind of, you know, this new approach to digital learning, and as I said, and a blended learning approach, I really think can really help transform some of those logistical disadvantages of children living in rural areas, or for some children being physically in the classroom is a real struggle for whatever reason, but actually needs the opportunity to engage in learning to get those qualifications that they're perfectly capable of achieving. Also looking at, you know, we're beginning to have some conversations, probably not going as fast as I would like, about what does a school day look like. You know, we've got a very traditional academic year and a school day. You know, we have this long break in the summer because children have to work in the summer in the fields for the harvest. Well, we don't do that anymore. So why do we organise our school year in the way that we do? So I think some of these issues are certainly a platform for looking at some of the operational issues. And for us here in Wales, as we approach our new curriculum reforms, where health and well-being is one of the areas of learning and experience, well, now more than ever, we really need to focus on children's health and well-being if they're to engage back in their learning. So incorporating and bringing some forward, actually, some of our curriculum reforms that weren't due to start for a little while yet, actually bringing some of that forward and that focus forward is an opportunity.
I wonder, thinking back on, obviously, it kind of culminated everything in terms of the exam results and it on for all quarters of the UK and it kind of peaked at that point. Yeah. Is there, I mean, I have watched with great interest over the years the Finland model, where, you know, they talk of where they use teacher assessments far more than we do in the UK. Does what's happened just completely say we are never going to go to that sort of teacher assessment again because of what's happened? Or do we think that it may have shown some merits in it, that actually the teachers can get it right? Or do you think, because it is very much a traditional versus new way of thinking, and a bit like Wales, I get the fact that Finland has a very small population compared to the UK. But I was wondering, what does it mean overall for education going forward? Have we just thought, right, we know now that what we've done in the past should always be the case? Or do you think there might be opportunities for change?
The examination situation has been really, really, really difficult. We thought that we were in a better position here in Wales because our examination qualification system is different to England. So, for instance, we have retained AS levels here in Wales. So A-level students sit 40% of their qualification at the end of what traditionally would be, you know, what I would call lower six, common parlance now, year 12. And we used that past performance in an actual exam to calculate grades for A-level. But as confident as we were that that was a fair way of doing it, clearly in the end, the balance of fairness swung to a situation where Welsh students needed to be treated the same as everybody else across the United Kingdom, moving to centre-assessed grades. And again, you know, in our GCSEs and our A-level system, we do have elements of continuous assessment. So most children, well, they're all children to me, I should call them young people, but they're all kids to me. Most students at A-level will sit three traditional A-levels, but will also study a Welsh baccalaureate. And that Welsh baccalaureate attracts exactly the same points as a traditional A-level. And increasingly, the vast, vast majority of universities across the UK will take the Welsh baccalaureate as an equivalent to an A-level. And that is very much based on a continuous assessment model with work being assessed by teachers, written work, oral presentation work, project work, and those results being moderated. So here in Wales, we've tried to keep a more balanced approach rather than simply relying on very high stakes end of 2 year qualifications. Our GCSEs, for instance, we still retain significant amounts of coursework, modulated coursework, and again, oral presentations. So you can't pass a Welsh language, first language GCSE or an English GCSE without having an oral assessment of your skills in speaking that language. So our systems are different. And I would argue, that element of a balance between end of year exams, continuous assessment is a better balance. But clearly, we have to learn the lessons of what happened this summer, because it clearly did not work out for any child, whichever part of the United Kingdom. And I've set up an independent review to learn the lessons of this summer and to make recommendations of how we need to address examinations next year. Because whilst it is absolutely the intention to carry out exams, those specs need to be amended to recognise lost learning time. And we also just have to remember, we don't know where we will be in terms of the pandemic. And we need to have a plan B that enjoys public confidence, student confidence and practitioner confidence in a way that we were not able to achieve this summer.
I'm going to ask a little bit of a cruel question now. This is, so okay. Is there anything you would do different? Looking back over the 6 months from when the kind of crisis fully hit, what would you do different?
I would have done anything to avoid the upset and distress that was caused to students this summer for A-level and AS grades. And that's why we're having this independent review, to have somebody with a fresh pair of eyes look over my decision-making, the decision-making of our regulator and our exam boards, you know, and the education system as a whole. Because clearly, to have avoided the situation where distress was caused to young people, I would have avoided at all costs. recognizing that no system is perfect. There are there is a downside to how we do examinations. There's an algorithm that is used every year to set the grade boundaries. You know, clearly there was a massive downside to working out calculated grades, but that's not to say there isn't a downside to going to teach to center assessment grades. You know, when we look at the figures, we know that, you know, some schools, you know, might have taken a different approach to others. I've even heard rumours that there are now schools in England that are appealing their own centre assessed grades because they feel that they've done it very harshly, and maybe a different centre has done it less harshly and they feel that they've put their students at a disadvantage. And in terms of equity, which was a big driver behind some of the concerns around the calculated grades, you know, there are real questions about equity in centre assessed grades and unconscious bias towards those students that potentially will have been graded highly or not graded so highly. So there is no system that is not without its challenges, but that's why we've got an independent review to look again to see what could have been done differently and the decisions that were made and to make sure we get it right next year.
So, I mean, if I could kind of move on, I guess, thinking about next year, moving on from next year's exams to next year's Welsh elections. And I suppose, you know, it's going to be an election like no other in the context of this sort of life-changing event for all of us, and also the sort of biggest election cycle that we've ever seen in this country. How are you feeling about the Welsh Party's sort of prospects in the run-up to those elections?
Well, it certainly is going to be a real challenge, isn't it? And potentially how you physically do an election. You know, we just don't know where the virus is going to be in the run-up to that election, how you engage with voters. You know, we could be in a position where it's simply not appropriate to do all the things that Liberal Democrats love doing, which is having those conversations on doorsteps and putting pieces of paper through people's letterboxes. So the context at the moment is a really unknown, and that's really challenging when trying to plan a campaign. So that's a real challenge. And also some of the preparation work, you know, undoubtedly has been impacted upon COVID. You know, we're not getting together in the usual ways to begin to plan and do that work. But look, if there's any political party that is innovative and can adapt its campaigning methods to the moment, then I'm confident that it's Liberal Democrats and Welsh Liberal Democrats included in that that can do that. But it's certainly going to be a very, very strange election, and you know, there's still a great deal of unknown about where the context in which that election will be fought.
And I mean, what are we sort of hoping for in that election? I mean, sorry, I'm obviously, apart from the joys of the Brecon and Radnorshire by-election, I haven't been a close student of Welsh politics. So, I mean, are you kind of able to talk us through sort of some of the areas where we have, you know, strong candidates who are campaigning, or, you know, what the kind of main issues in the election are likely to be, or sort of just give us a little bit of a scene setter for sort of people who might not be following it obviously as closely as you do?
I think what's really exciting going forward is that there will be a slate of candidates with a real breadth of experience, but also some new and fresh faces coming to the fore in terms of candidates who have placed on top of our regional lists. So I think it'll be a really exciting proposition, as I said, putting forward, you know, lots of new faces, but also, you know, some of those campaigners that such as Rodney Berman, who will be standing in Cardiff Central and topping the list for South Wales Central. Some people with real experience who have got a track record, in the case of Rodney, for instance, in local government, that has been second to none when he ran the city council. As I said, as well as new faces with a breadth of experience outside of politics that can really bring something meaningful to Senate discussions when we get a Liberal Democrat group back. And of course, that's the main goal, is to re-establish a Liberal Democrat group within the Senate, and with a policy platform that can bring real change. And because of the electoral system that we have for Senate elections, and you know, there's a real opportunity often to be able to get Welsh Liberal Democrat policies into action. And so making sure that we've got a group back who's in a position to press that influence home and to make real change, I think, is an exciting prospect.
Can I ask, I mean, one of the questions that always gets asked of the Liberal Democrat leader in Westminster is, are you going to work with Labour? Are you going to work with the Tories? That it's the default first question.
Yeah.
Kind of, if you have the balance of power, what do you do? Now, how are you, and there's lots of conversations going on, do we want a Paddy Ashdown kind of Tony Blair sort of arrangement, you know, and things like that. How are you dealing with those conversations in Wales, given that you're in coalition at the moment, you might have the balance of power in the future? How do you get off those questions and onto probably questions you want to talk about, which is distinctive Lib Dem policy and difference?
Yeah, and that's a real challenge to do, isn't it? That's a real challenge for campaigners. But I think our job is to tell our own story and to demonstrate why having a Liberal Democrat in the Senate will make a difference. And that might be part of a formal coalition with another political party or groups of parties. It may be an informal agreement, you know, a bit like a supply and demand. We were able to introduce the Welsh version of the pupil premium as a result of a budget negotiation in the previous Senate between myself and the then First Minister. So I think we've got to demonstrate that we have solutions to the real issues that are facing people here in Wales, and that given the chance, we will put them and their needs first, as opposed to some ideological, you know, over my dead body, am I going to cooperate? You know, I think I've learned over the years, and my goodness me, when I think back to my younger self, and I wasn't the youngest person elected in 1999, I was the youngest woman. And there was nobody more partisan than me. But what I've learned is that absolute, you know, opposition for opposition's sake, and, you know, an unwillingness to compromise, or sometimes, you know, I think I was guilty of not even a willingness to think about the problem from a different person's perspective. You know, I can tell you, it's a lot more satisfying and you get a lot more done if you take the time and trouble to think about, as I said at the beginning, what unites you rather than divides you. And the ability to introduce a pupil premium in Wales. We will spend over £90 million this year in the Welsh budget on the education of our poorest children. We've expanded it to cover the costs of school uniform. We've expanded it to cover the costs associated with the school day, so that children are going into school without the stigma of not having what they need, you know, to participate in the classroom, or indeed to participate in extracurricular activities, which we know makes a massive difference to a child's education. You know, those clubs, sports clubs, those trips, those experiences that really build upon what you learn in the classroom. You know, that's a lot more positive contribution than simply standing on the sidelines and shouting and throwing brickbats at somebody else because they belong to a different political party.
Fair enough. I mean, I suppose that links to, you know, now that we're getting back to sort of our achievements in Wales, I mean, that gets back to, I think, one of the most common questions which we sort of see asked on online, you know, whenever we're sort of discussing what you've been doing, which is, you know, why, you know, and personally, it's something I find very frustrating as well, is that, you know, I just don't feel like the National Party makes as much as it could about what you've been doing. So, you know, if I look at the kind of Lib Dems, you know, official Twitter feed, like there's not a huge amount in there in terms of what we've been doing in Wales. And, you know, and then meanwhile, we have people going on about how we're only ever in propping up the Conservatives, when it's like, we're literally in coalition with Labour in Wales right now. So it's obviously not true. So yeah, I mean, I suppose my question is, what, you know, what would you like to see us doing to make more of what you're working on? Or, you know, how do you feel like the National Party can build on what you've been working on. And, you know, especially in the field of education, which is something where the Liberal Democrats have a very, very strong history of campaigning, sort of going back to the kind of 1870s Education Act, and then more recently your Paddy Ashdown penny on the pound for education. You know, it's an area, it's a policy area where we have a very strong record and where, you know, we should be shouting more. And I guess, how would you like to see us doing that?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a unique Lib Dem problem. I think innovations in Welsh politics often goes under the radar, just generally. Maybe that's because we're a small nation. But just generally, I think, you know, some of the innovation in Welsh politics, not just from, you know, efforts on behalf of Welsh Liberal Democrats, but efforts from other political parties have often go unnoticed. So if I think back to the first term of the Assembly, for instance, we were the first devolved administration that created the post of a children's commissioner in response to historic child abuse tragedies and scandals that had come before. We were the first party of the United Kingdom that introduced the levy on plastic bags. Now that's, you know, that's something that all political parties supported, and we got it done first. We were able, via my private members bill in the last assembly, the first part of the United Kingdom to introduce safe nurse staffing levels in our hospital wards. And again, that was achieved. It was my private members bill, but it was backed by all other political parties at the assembly, because everybody agreed that was the right thing to do. So I think sometimes innovation in Welsh politics tends to go unnoticed anyway, because we're a small country. And people sometimes literally take the for Wales, for England, breed Wales, or vice versa. You know, people forget sometimes the difference. That's not helped by the media. My press team spend a lot of time explaining to the media when they're talking about education that it's a devolved issue, and decisions that are taken in England don't mean that they're the same here in Wales. Could the federal party do more? I guess they can. I guess they always could. I don't take it personally. Again, I think, you know, it's been having the Welsh voice heard has been it by the federal party, you know, has been a bit of a soundtrack to my 20 odd year political career. So it's not new. I don't take it personally, and it's not the fault of any one individual in the federal party. I just think sometimes that we could do better. The party could do better in that regard. But I'd like to think that what we've been able to achieve in Wales in education over the last 4.5 years, you know, can help us, you know, build that narrative. When I sat in the First Minister's office and he offered me the job, one of the things that I knew that was coming down the track were imminently was student finance reform. And the First Minister said, you might, if you like, I can make you the Minister for Education, but I can specifically give the idea of student finance reform to somebody else if you as a Liberal Democrat don't want to touch it. Because he said, I can understand why you might not want to touch it. But hey, if you're going to be the education minister, you can't pick and choose, can you? You know, and we've introduced the most progressive form of student finance anywhere in the United Kingdom. And, you know, if ever we needed an antidote to some of the accusations of the coalition years, you know, I'd like to think that we can point to what a Liberal Democrat minister has done here in Wales in terms of student finance, where our poorest students will go to university this year. Yes, they will take out a loan for their fees, which they will not have to pay back until they're earning, you know, in excess of 20 odd thousand pounds a year. But our poorest students will go to university this year with a grant, the equivalent of the living wage, a grant, which they will never pay back. And it is those upfront costs of university that put people off. And we've seen a significant rise this year in those students going on to university from non-traditional backgrounds. And they will be supported to do that by a student finance regime that has been introduced by a Liberal Democrat minister with the support of Labour colleagues.
See, again, I didn't know that.
I like to think
myself as a fair Lib Dem Nors, And I didn't know that. So, and Laura,
did you also know that it's available for postgraduate students? And we also fund part-timers. We have seen a significant growth in part-time learning with the Open University, because you can also, if you don't have the resources, it's means tested, but you can also have a grant to be a part-time degree learner as well.
Laura chairs the Northern Liberal Network as well, and so this seems to be a strand we get from Scottish Lib Dems, Northern Midlands, and yourself in Wales, that there is definitely a Westminster schism towards Pod. I get that it's the seat of all power kind of in the UK, but actually these are voices we have to do. And if I don't exactly know what Ed means by his listening exercise that he's going to do, as opposed to what was done in the Thornhill review. But actually, surely, learning from our successes, and you know, all that debate about coalition during the leadership election, will it haunt us, will it not? Well, we should be shouting about our successes, like what you're doing in Wales.
Well, I think you're right. And I have to say, you know, I have heard directly a lot more from Ed since he took up a temporary capacity, and now he's in a permanent capacity, than I have heard from a lot of other previous leaders. So fair play to him. He's been wanting to keep in touch a lot more, and that is encouraging. And I think you should recognise it when people are trying, you know, recognise an issue and are trying to address it.
So I think one more question for me, and then I think I'm out of questions. we've got a new education spokesperson in the UK, Daisy Gooper, who's a new MP who was elected and who's sort of widely seen as one of the party's rising stars. And I think I'm very excited to see what she's going to do with the portfolio. What would be your sort of, if you were going to say one message to her, key message, what would that be in terms of where she should focus and, you know, what she should be talking about?
Well, Daisy's been in touch, and you know, and she's so fortunate. She is so fortunate because I think, you know, being in charge of education, it is absolutely the best job that you could possibly have. There is a Welsh word for school, obviously in our own language, and the Welsh word for school is ysgol. It is also the Welsh word for ladder, because we instinctively know, as Welsh people, we instinctively know that education and school is a way up. And I think as Liberal Democrats, we instinctively know that as well. So it is absolutely the best job that anybody can possibly have. And what I have tried to do since I've been in this incredibly privileged position is to copy the motto or the philosophy of Great Ormond Street Hospital, and that is children first and always. And I think if we put the needs of children front and centre of our education policy, I don't think we'll go far wrong. So that's what I would say to Daisy. Think constantly about what do our children and our young people need? What is in their best interest? And sometimes it can be easy to be knocked off by other voices, because there aren't lots of people lobbying for children, or, you know, solely for children. But I think if you keep children front and centre, first and always, then I think you'll have a great approach to education.
And I suppose a question from me would be, it's not from me actually, it's one from one of our listeners who said, you know, going back to what Laura said, that we have like the largest elections since 1973, critical elections, and where would you like to see Lib Dem policy go in terms of education? What is missing from our policy? What would you like highlighting more? What is next in terms of Lib Dem policy? You'd like working with Daisy and all the other devolved education spokespeople. What's next for Lib Dems in terms of education?
I think we need a relentless focus on the attainment gap. Too many of our children's educational destiny is decided by the size of their parents' paycheck, rather than their own innate ability. We need to focus also relentlessly on ensuring that those people that work with our children, whether they be teaching assistants, teachers, youth workers, councillors, we need them to be of the highest quality, and we really need a focus on professional learning throughout their careers to support them to be the very best that they can be, and to make sure that then they can use their skills to help our children. So we've invested here in Wales in the largest professional learning program ever for the teaching profession since the Assembly was created. So I think a relentless focus on the attainment gap and professional learning for our teachers, whether that be in initial teacher education or post-qualification training, I think is really, really crucial. And also understanding that learning can't stick unless you address a child's well-being. And sometimes we're asking teachers to make up the deficits of things that they're not responsible for. So we have to look holistically at that child and make sure that we're supporting children and families better. Because a child who is distressed because of circumstances at home, you know, that is a child that is not going to be able to thrive. And there's only so much a school or individual practitioner can do. So again, a relentless focus on supporting children from before they're born, supporting families to give their children the best start. I haven't yet met a mum or a dad yet that didn't want to do the very best by their children. But sometimes we make it really hard for parents to do the very best. It's all very well an education minister or a teacher saying to a mum, because it's usually a mum, you need to be reading every night to your child. But if you've worked a number of jobs that day just to keep a roof over that child's head and to be able to feed them that evening, that's a big ask. So I think, you know, a relentless focus on families also outside of education and joined up policies, that's when you'll do best for children, and that's when they'll all really fly.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, all I can say is just thank you so much for coming on the pod. That has been absolutely, it's been a joy for me. I don't know about you, Laura. That has been
that was great.
About some of the brilliant work Lib Dems do when we get into Parliament. And don't forget, you know, a lot of people watching and listening to this podcast, you know, maybe starting out from scratch, wondering, you know, what is the point of being a Liberal Democrat when, you know, we can be in a doldrums in the polls. But you see, when Lib Dems get in power, whether that's a council level or, you know, like Kirsty was right in the Welsh Assembly, we can make a difference. We can make positive difference. So, just thank you so much, Kirsty. We really appreciate it. Just want to point out, you can follow Kirsty on Twitter at Kirsty_Williams. So do check out. It does have a lot of things about block roads in Wales and stuff like
sorry,
that.
Oh, sorry, no, yeah. If you want to hear a lot about Brecon and Radnor, follow that one. If you want to hear about Welsh, if you want to hear about education, then it's Welsh WG Min Education. If you're really interested in education, otherwise, yeah, you will hear a lot about blocked roads in Powys.
I mean, there's obviously only one answer here, which is to follow both of them.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. So thank you so much, Kirsty. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Do follow everything to do with the Lib Dem podcast at Lib Dem Pod. We've got loads of fantastic episodes coming up, including the mysterious Jamie Stone is about to appear. So that should be... So we've gone to Wales, and now we're going right to the top of Scotland. So we're getting round everywhere. And we've also got lots more episodes to do with Wales, because Claire Halliwell, who's the new Welsh Chief Exec, is a friend of mine. And he said, if I don't get more Welsh voices onto the podcast, I'll be in trouble. So that is absolutely going to be happening. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching. Do stay safe, and we'll be back with another episode very soon.